morning, everybody, or good afternoon, everybody, whenever it is that you get your podcast fix. My name is Derek Smith, and this is the Truth or Derek Show, or the Truth or Derek Podcast, or the Truth or Derek, you know how we roll around here. Call it whatever you want. As long as you hit that good old download button, give us a listen, reach out to us, let us know what you think. I got a whole bunch of questions. We got a ton of stuff in the last week. I'll get to a little bit of it today, but we got a heavy show to get to today because we got our Josh and Franz back, but we also have a special guest, the great Danielle Vasanova, international model, actress, just an all-around amazing human being. And she fits in like a glove. I actually I wanted to give our boys, Josh and Franz, a shout-out because we record on Fridays. I got held up late in the meeting on Thursday, and I was going to do my prep stuff on Friday, and then Friday, the traffic was a nightmare, and I got held up again. So I got to say, man, my team, the boys carried it because, sometimes you have an off day. You know who never has an off day? Our sponsor, www.podstars.net. Get ready to take your podcasting career to the next level with www.podstars.net. Podstars is a talented and passionate community that will give you the opportunity to interview top professionals from a variety of industries where they will share their insights and experiences with your audience. Plus, everybody will have access to the exclusive celebrity catalog featuring some of the best in the business, both new and established. And our super special guest today, Danielle Vasanova, right on the front of the site. She's on there. So Podstars is also free to join. As a member, you can choose from the catalog of celebrities to interview on your podcast, and if interested, for an additional monthly fee of only $8.99 a month, you can upgrade to the Community Plan, a completely different and exciting catalog, full of some of the best experts and professionals in their fields today, as well as access to everybody in the whole Podstars universe. It is a great way to invest in your podcast, as you will be able to save time and money by booking guests from one platform with an expansive catalog that's constantly being added to. I know, we just added some comedians and a few other interesting people, so go on, head over there. Why wait? Check it out. www.podstars.net now and start exploring all that they have to offer. You will not want to miss out on this amazing opportunity to elevate your podcasting career and be a part of the exciting community. So yeah, head over, check it out. So yes, thanks as always for coming back and hanging out with us again. Really exciting show today. I know we've been trying to get Danielle Vasanova on for a while. Again, she's just an amazing chick. I've always say just a Googler or YouTuber. She's been in a bunch of TV shows and movies, and she just does the modeling and voiceover stuff for video games. It's very cool. And again, she fits in like a glove. And you know, I try to I try to show up at 100% every single time. It just, that was like the perfect storm of everything going wrong. But again, very fortunate to have my team of Josh and Franz, and I got a whole bunch of your questions and stuff. I mean, we got a big week. We're going to put out two or three shows, I think. You know, Cheryl McCollum and Lisa Rybakov. We recorded with them, so that'll be out in the next day or two. And we also have Josh Schiffer and Matthew McMahon. Josh Schiffer is everywhere. I know, we love an extra helping of the Schiffer quicker picker upper. A couple of quick questions, because I really want to get to Danielle, Josh, and Franz. Jen from DC wrote to us on Twitter, three things that you would bring with you on a deserted island and one song that would play on repeat. The song's easy, obviously. Call Me Maybe by Carly Rae Jepsen. The three things I would bring with me. I don't know, because obviously I'm going to have to figure out how to feed myself. So maybe like either a fishing rod or a bow and arrow. Not really big on fish, but I'm assuming if I'm standing on the desert island, I don't have much of a choice. A lighter. Definitely a lighter. Because I see all this, and I went to camp when I was younger, and I remember trying to do that thing where you rub the wood together to start a fire, and I don't think that's possible. You'd have no skin left on your hand, so definitely a lighter. Oh, you know what? Maybe as a game of skill to keep yourself busy and not go crazy, a set of golf clubs. So that's my answer. A bow and arrow or a fishing rod, a lighter, and a set of golf clubs. And if I can, the internet, but I don't think that's an option. And I might change my Carly Rae Jepsen song to Antihero by Taylor Swift, but either one of those would be fine. Fit John had a good one. He didn't tell me where he was from. He said, if I can compete in any Olympic sport, what would it be? I can't run. I wouldn't be a good runner even when I was younger. It's not a that I gained weight thing. I can't run. Even when I was younger, I was not a fast runner. I'm sort of afraid of heights, so nothing up high. And I'm not like those uneven bars. I'm not flipping around because I'm always worried I'm going to land on my head. I don't know. What is the maybe boxing? Because I know it takes an insane amount of cardio, but it seems like one of those things where maybe I get a lucky shot in and I can win a fight or two. Or what's the I don't know the name of it. I'll have to look it up. I just remember from when the regular Nintendo, when you were younger, there was one where like you have to cross country ski for a certain distance, and then you like do target shooting, and then I think there was something else. That seems like something I could get, because I know I can cross country ski. It's just moving your legs back and forth, and I can shoot. Well, maybe from being on that island, with my bow and arrow skills, maybe after I get off the island, I can go do the cross country ski shooting thing. I'll have to look up the name of that. Our man Johnny in Pittsburgh said, Derek, it's been a few weeks since you played one of your things back in slow motion. So can you go back to last week and go to 1221 and play it in slow motion where you sound silly? Well, Johnny, anything for you, buddy. Gathering, you were in the same team or sat at the desk across from each other, then I kind of get it. I mean, you know. There's 7 billion people in the world. Roughly half of them are women. You don't have to go for your friend's ex. But
I've always worried that anyone knows me if I've had too much to drink or I actually sound
older,
like this.
It is more difficult to meet people. And maybe you do have some sort of a connection. And it would be worth the awkward stuff. But my advice would be
don't drink and podcast. Again, that's not actually, well, Jesus, I hope that's not actually what I sound like. But that's what I sound like when it's slowed down. Apparently, I don't know, somebody started writing in about that. I guess a lot of people are doing that now. So just so you know, I wasn't hopping on the bandwagon. I didn't come up with that organically. Someone told me to do it, but it makes me laugh every time. One last question, and again, you guys know, reach out to me on Twitter at Derek Vampire Slayer, or just Google the Truth or Derek podcast. Send me a message at anything. Email me podstars@outlook.com. Any questions, any thoughts, and anything you want to talk to some guests, you want to get Josh and Franz some question, or you want to have anything else? Again, anything you want, just hit me up and I'll see if I can make it happen. Again, very cool experience getting Danielle with Josh and Franz today. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So yes, please reach out. Any thoughts or ideas? One last one. Laura in New Jersey said, what is the worst date you've ever been on and why? I haven't actually had too many bad ones, but one does stick out. Before I met my wife, I was dating a woman. And it was in that first couple of weeks where, not so much an awkward stage, but you're just, you know, getting to know each other and all that sort of thing. And that movie Carla had just come out. Based on the Carla Homolka and Paul Bernardo story, which, what a stupid idea in the beginning of a relationship to go on a date to that movie, because anybody who's familiar with that case knows how horrifying it was. And, yeah, especially at the beginning, like, we just both left the theater, and it wasn't like you weren't having a romantic night after watching a movie like that, so it was just kind of a give each other a kiss, get in your cars, and go your separate ways, so. That one definitely stuck out as one of the worst movies, or one of the worst dates I've ever had. I'll think on that. Again, we got a whole bunch of episodes to get to this week, and I got a ton of questions. I got like a dozen good questions, I promise you. In the next 3 to 4 episodes, I'll clear all those out. But if you got anything new, again, reach out to me. But in the meantime, I know we've been tickling you with a feather, but we got Josh Schiffer, we got Franz Borghardt, and we have our new... our new super special guest, the great Danielle Vasanova. Let's go.
Oh, my God. That was the funniest story you've ever told.
Well,
that was hilarious.
If
God,
y'all,
you could have heard that.
If y'all were waiting for two world-class lawyers and an internationally known fantastic actress / supermodel to podcast together, today is your lucky day. So first up, what is it that makes Louisiana spicy? Is it the food? Is it the nightlife? Or is it the king of Baton Rouge? He runs his own law firm. He visits churches all over the world. He's a regular on Court TV, various other news outlets, and kicking in on Talk 107.3 with Brian Haldane. He is the fantastic Franz Borghardt. Joined as
What's up, guys?
By the T or D podcast Hall of Famer, a mere two states over, the pride of Atlanta, Georgia, also running a law firm when he's not killing it on social media, CNN, Court TV, ATL News One, and everywhere they need brilliant advice. He loves cats. He loves courthouses. He is the great Joshua Schiffer. And our special guest for the first time when she is not hanging around on podcast or slumming it on a podcast with us, you can find her on covers of magazines, on billboards, on the big and small screen, Dexter, Nip Tuck, video game voices, and a bunch of other stuff. She is the red carpet walking, horse riding legend that is the amazing Danielle Vasanova. How's everyone doing?
Hey, guys.
Danielle, you're moving here to the Hollywood of the South here one of these days, right? Atlanta. We got Atlanta.
Is there a show called Queen of the South?
there could be. We will produce anything in this city. We actually just had a newspaper article coming out that we have too much studio space. And I didn't understand how that could possibly exist.
The struggle is real.
Struggle's great. And I can get you a deal now. That CNN Center, that was the news this week. They took down the giant CNN sign, and CNN has left. But we've got this gigantor building in the middle of downtown Atlanta that they've rebranded the Center. And I know I can get a good concession on the sign. Danielle or Franz or Derek, man, I can get that sign for you. It would be world famous immediately.
I don't know if Danielle's ever been to Georgia, but I know they do film
there.
I know they filmed The Walking Dead there, and everybody complains it's too bloody hot and it's too humid all the time.
I did MacGyver down there, and don't you guys also have Tyler Perry Studios,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Tyler Perry has basically got a sweet deal on a former military base right next to town, so it was huge. And I think it's the second or third largest sound studio in the world. Like, it's won all these awards. They've spent the money.
I'm a little upset.
You guys have Pinewood down there as well?
Pinewood's down here. We've got Tyler Perry. Georgia, basically, with its state and local tax incentives, decided we wanted that business. We're a non-union state, so obviously the production companies love hearing that.
We
gave away money left, right, and center if you would come down here and do a production. And they do the incentives by the production. So they've really aggressively courted that universe, and they've moved here. We have whole parts of the state that basically were rural, undeveloped until the movies came to town, and it's a little Hollywood South.
Woohoo! Yeah. So maybe we should do another studio down there. What do you say?
We love our reality television, a lot of reality television down here.
Do you have a favorite reality television show?
So my current girlfriend, who is amazing, has introduced me to the trashiest of reality television, those involving adding a third person to your relationship.
Because that always works out, right?
Yeah, it's obviously the best thing you can do for your relationship. Because if two
have you ever done that?
Oh no, are you kidding me? I have a hard time being in a relationship with myself.
Like if we looked like you, then that would maybe be an option. But we look like us. We're lucky if we get one person in the scenario, right? It's not like
that's before we get to Josh's personality. Like that's just a horrible. It's hard to date lawyers, bluntly, because we're always married to the job, because it's one of those weird jobs where if you screw up, somebody goes to prison forever. So it's
right. There's that. Yeah.
It's a little bit different than like the, oh, honey, I got to stay late. No, sweetie, I got to be here, because if I leave, the judge will arrest me. and if I don't do this well, someone suffers and curses me till they die.
Yeah.
Sweetheart, I told the judge I needed to leave, and he was unimpressed.
Yeah.
All right. Let's fit back to this. I'm sorry. I don't know why
Derek's here. I totally forgot about that.
I appreciate it. I was going to ask you guys, because you guys all kind of deal with this, and I'll ask Danielle first. Is there, like, when you guys are on live TV, is there like a process you go through ahead of time? Because, you know, when you're doing this, and I'm used to recording and editing and all that, but when you're on live TV, like if you go on there, I know Danielle was on the red carpet at the Oscars a few weeks ago, like you can't sneeze or cough or have a fit or anything like that, because obviously then that's all you're going to be known for. So do you have like a routine to go through to make sure that you can have like a 3 or 4 hour period where you're just perfect?
I've had so many screw ups and mess ups and horrible pictures and all the things out there. So I just let it ride. You know, it's his life, and you can't be too much of a perfectionist, I don't think, because it just never works out. The harder you try, the worse it gets, I feel like.
So you come out of the true entertainment universe. Like, you guys have a lot of freedom with creation, and there's a lot of spontaneity. How do you deal with like that combination of spontaneity and scripting while maintaining your authenticity? Because, you know, Franz and I have done all these trains about, oh no, man, you don't plan the words. They just come out because you're speaking and you're in the zone. That's a totally different thing for y'all. But you still have that authenticity that pours out of the script. That's what makes great actors and actresses compelling and engaging. How do you just talk about that a little bit? Because that level of authenticity, lawyers lack. When we start faking it, you can.
You guys need to take an improv class.
Seriously, there are lawyers that do that.
It depends on who you're working with, right? Like, if you're working with a director who I have not had the pleasure of working with yet to this point, but hopefully, knock on wood, I will in the future, like Woody Allen. I mean, the camera will just roll and they'll do long takes and the actors will just improv the scene in character. Sometimes there's, you know, well, all the time there's script supervisors. If you're working on, say, an episodic television show, and a lot of times they want you by the book. So you have to be pretty spot on. Depends on the director, though. Sometimes they'll let you go off an improv. Sometimes they welcome it and they want that. And sometimes you get directors like Woody Allen where you're just improvising everything. So it really just depends on the scenario.
Do you have like a personal preference as an artist? Is it something where, or is it just kind of the project? If that's when it's going to be a project with more improvisation as opposed to something that's more scripted based.
Look, like a medical, like I just auditioned for a medical series. And if it's something like that, I'd probably prefer it to be scripted, because I can't improv all of this, you know, medical jargon. I'm not, that's beyond me.
That would be funny, though. I just get that. If you get there day one, they're like, you're just going to improv this. Then you go in and you're doing heart surgery and they're like, come on, let's go, dude. don't you know what a vena cava is?
Exactly. So I think it depends on the scenario, yeah.
One of the things I was going to ask you, because you were actually in what, in my opinion, was one of the best dramas ever. You were in an episode of Dexter.
Yes, I play Batista's love interest in
Yes, I remember. So when you get tapped for that, is it more exciting to work on a show that you're familiar with? Or is it just like you're an actress and, you know, shoot me over a script and, you know, like, we don't want to say any names, but it's like, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson seems like he takes every single script that's put in front of him.
Look, when you're an actor and you're just trying to build a career, sometimes, you know, you got to put food on the table and you've got to work, right? So obviously you want to have your pick of the litter with good projects, but sometimes you're like, okay, we've got to, you know, it's a business and we've got to keep the ball rolling here.
So it's not like something comes across your desk and you're like, I'm not taking that. I'm waiting for Avatar Part 3.
Like, if you're, yeah, exactly. If you're in a position where you can just pass on things and wait for the perfect opportunity, then God bless you. And if not, then, you know, hopefully you're, you know, you're working with good agents and people who will, you know, position you in the right way. Right. But originally that character kind of developed, and originally I declined the audition because it required nudity. And so I had told my agent, I don't want to do that. And he's like, it's UDK, Ulrich Dawson and Kritzer, who are a very big casting office. And so they cast a lot of projects. And so sometimes us actors will go in, not with the intention to, you always want to get the job, right? But you're auditioning for that casting office because maybe they're casting 20 different shows, right? So maybe you don't get that part, but they see you as something, you know, for another role or another TV show or another movie. So, and anyway, he's like, it's UDK, just go in, just audition, just say hi, basically. So I was like, screw this, I don't want to go, I was in a bad mood. I was like, whatever, fine, I'll go. Anyway, long story short, it was like 2 weeks later and I hadn't heard anything. And so I had totally forgot about it. And he's like, yeah, I remember that UDK audition for Dexter that you went up for. And I said, yeah. He's like, you got the part. I'm like, what? Okay. Other times, like this one time, I was up for a NBC show that Jeannie Bachrach was casting called The Philanthropist with Neve Campbell, James Purfoy, another guy from The Wire. Anyway, a good cast. And I went in on a Friday. And then by Friday evening, he's like, your passport's valid, right? I go, yeah. He goes, you booked it. You're leaving for South Africa tomorrow. So sometimes, like, we never know. It's a wild and wild ride.
Now, how does that relationship with the casting directors work? Like, they're obviously the names we never see as fans and consumers, but these are the people that y'all are really auditioning for almost more than the directors and the producers, it sounds.
Well, they're the gatekeepers, essentially, right? You know, if you know, they know you and they know your work and they can send you straight to producers, great, amazing. Sometimes, you know, you go in for that initial audition, they like you, that you go to the next step, right? And so sometimes if you're testing for a network, you might go in 5 times, 6 times. It just depends.
Now, sorry, I just wanted to go back a tiny bit. So you get a script, or like, is it the tiniest bit insulting when you have to read for a part? Because obviously now you've been in enough things, you've done enough voiceover work where, you know, you kind of, they know who you are and they know what you're capable of, where, you know, whether it's a big part or a small part or whether it's shot and you're thinking, okay, you know what, I get this, you know, I get this offer, or I get this kind of, you know, I got to fly out there. And you get there and there's 100 other people reading for it. Are you thinking, like, not that I'm better than that, but, like, you know, I've already seen what I can do. Is it like something that you're going to
get? Thanks a lot, guys. Do you know who I am?
I was going to say, Derek, are you projecting a little bit here? Do you want
you to know who I am?
You need to talk about what that nice man said to you.
Josh, can you imagine, Josh, us calling, getting a call from a potential client and us saying, look, we're not doing a consult. You're either going to hire me or you're not. I'm Josh Shipper. I'm Franz Borchardt. I mean, I can't even imagine saying that.
Well, I got to say, for certain clients, that's exactly what they want. And you do the I'm big bad because that's what they want to pay for. And it's weird and counterintuitive the way that certain retail behaviors are hiring lawyers. The mistake that every baby lawyer makes is answering the phone 24 hours a day. If you answer the phone 24 hours a day, people will call you 24 hours a day. And it's like, yo, listen, it's Sunday morning at 7 a.m. I know you're still drunk. I'm trying to get my sleep on. I do not want to answer what time your court date is in 60 days.
You're like, boundaries, people. Boundaries.
Yeah, like, come on now. So we try to teach people about the doctor's model of how to run your office as a lawyer. Right. You never call your doctor's office and expect to speak to the doctor. You're going to get someone. The best way to get in touch with me, and we drill it into their heads, email Josh. He doesn't want to take your phone call because he's really busy, and he really wants to answer your inquiry thoroughly, so writing is best. And that's the way of moderating that client control. Otherwise, you will literally get calls 24 hours a day, and it'll drive you nuts.
Oh, I can believe it. I can believe it, 100%.
So, permission to go back, Derek. Quick question. You auditioned for a role in Dexter, which, love the show, right? You know that it's not going to be kind of the right role for you because if I heard you right, they wanted nudity and you're like, yeah, but you get the role. So what do you do then when you're like, I want to be on Dexter, I want the role, but I'm not willing to do X, Y, and Z to keep the role? How does that play out?
I didn't end up having to do it, which was good, but they'll negotiate. right? So then it's kind of, you know, it's kind of in your agent's hands. Or, you know, you'll say, look, I would do that if it can be more of a series regular type of role or a reoccurring role, like a more substantial role, right?
And you can confirm they make a triple extra large full nude bodysuit for me, right? Like, verify that if Derek was to buy one of those, I would be able to get it.
You know, it's funny. I did this video game series. I'm kind of in the Comic-Con space, right? Oh. And so one day they told me that I had to go up.
Where have you been all my
down
life?
Franz, oh my down, down, Franz.
So I had to go up. They said that they wanted to do a body scan. And they sent me
up. I bet they did.
They sent me up to Van Nuys, okay, which is Mount Chicawarrawarra as the porn capital of
I recognize that background. Yeah.
This doesn't sound sketchy at all.
Yeah.
And I have to go into this weird warehouse, like in the back, to be body scanned by a guy named Richard, aka Dick. Getting a body scan by Dick.
Never happening. Not if you're in my orbit.
I see like the head of Bruce Willis, Halle Berry, Michelle Pfeiffer, like all of these people. So this is super weird. And literally they ask you to go, you have to stand on this platform in a nude G-string. And this machine goes all the way around you.
So Brooks Brothers tried to sell me a suit like that. And I'm like, Brooks Brothers, you are not cloning my special Josh parts and making $1 billion that way. Because I know that's a business. I've been to Japan. They will buy anything. And I do not trust anything. So true story. We don't show people when you get scanned to enter our jail. We have a pretty thorough scanner. They got in trouble because it's detailed.
And very detailed.
When people were seeing the picture that they were submitting to, people got really upset. So now they hide the image from anybody because it's basically a full-on nude picture. For everybody that goes in and out of the jail, which I guarantee you do not want to see most of those people naked. No, any question.
Does size matter?
You get into size jokes in the penal setting, and it really gets.
You just said penal.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of inadvertent nudity that is not appreciated. So those clothes, the jumper that they give most inmates, they're loose fitting for a reason. And if you bend over to tie your shoe, or you know what, it's horrifying the things that you see as a
The best is when they accessorize the prison jumpsuit to make it custom to their lifestyle. And again, leaving very little to the imagination.
What lifestyle? To the jail lifestyle?
Whatever their culture in the prison.
Imagine having 24 hours a day to do nothing.
Right.
Then figure out what you're going to do. Decorating your uniform goes high on that list.
I was curious outside of prison jumpsuits. I know when Franz and I first got acquainted, you were actually, Franz, doing some modeling for a suit place in Louisiana. So again,
I feel very uncomfortable using the word model with who we have in the group. So yeah. There is a suit company that makes custom suits called Martinez Custom Clothier in Baton Rouge. And he's actually a national suit maker. And I fit like a model. I check certain boxes based on my size, my height. And long story made short, he was like, hey, do you mind, like, we're doing a promotional video. Do you want a model? And at 44, 45 years old, I can honestly say I'd never been asked to model before. And I was like, I got to check this box. I want to be able to say I was a model. So sure enough, I got a free suit jacket, very nice custom suit jacket. And I modeled and they interviewed me, not realizing that I get paid to speak for a living, which was their mistake.
And so, yes, I have modeled on a few occasions for different clothing companies.
Now, what he's not sharing is that the audition involved him going to the back room in Van Nuys, California.
That warehouse.
There was. Let me tell you something.
Nude male modeling.
Let me tell you something.
That's a totally different part of that story.
I'm narcissistic enough, though. Unlike you, Josh, I'm narcissistic enough to admit I would totally love to have a scanned and replicated cloned version of me somewhere. Not in Japan.
I would sit for it today. So there used to be an adult novelty that allowed you to do that, and it was a regular gift of mine for certain occasions when I was a younger man, most often something involving getting married or something like that, because I believe cloning is a benefit. Come on, man. Isn't plagiarism the most sincere form of flattery?
Replication is the biggest form of flattery.
Plagiarism.
Exactly. And if someone wants that from me, hey, I sell time, and that's it. It's not much of an asset to sell. So
I was
going to
say, if plagiarism was the good way to do it, then I would just say I'm Danielle and my video's not working, and then you guys could just ask me questions about modeling and acting. And
so here's the question. Here's the question from a non inappropriate, non sexual standpoint. Here's the question: if you could clone one human being, living or dead, and be BFF with them and like hang out with them and all that, who would that individual be?
Is that a question for me?
Anybody. I'm just throwing it out there.
For me, it would have to be Jennifer Connelly. I don't
know. You are fixated on her.
You know what? Yeah, but
Labyrinth was a good movie.
That's what I'm talking about. I grew up on that movie, and that was the whole kind of thing where it was like, if you were going to clone somebody to marry them or hang out with them all day.
Are you saying that movie made you a man? Because that's the way I heard it. That's horribly inappropriate. And here's the problem. Have you ever met your heroes? It's a disaster. You don't want to meet your hero because they're a human. And humans and... Some of them are weird. I don't know how often you're with them.
So I asked the question because I've actually thought about it, right? And one of my favorite individuals ever breathing and roaming the planet was Anthony Bourdain. I mean, I was broken. When he died, I was broken. But to Josh's point, I've actually had thought sessions where, you know, if I could hang out with Anthony Bourdain, I don't think he'd like me.
He hated everything.
I'm pretty sure he wouldn't like me.
Why? Why do you say that?
I just don't. I don't think I would have been his brand of vodka. I just don't.
Really?
Now, doesn't mean I wouldn't want to hang out with the dude.
Notoriously prickly guy. I don't know him either. But like, he was the notoriously prickly kind of fella.
You know, the one thing I loved about him and the approach that he gave to reality television was he told the truth. You know, if you watch. I mean, especially if you watch anything on the Food Network, it's an ass kissing festival. Nobody's ever had a bad bite of food. Nobody's ever had a bad experience where you saw some of him. I mean, you know, Franz is right. He hated a lot of people. A lot of people hated him, but it was a refreshing change in that genre to have somebody take a bite of something and say, wow, this is like shit.
That was the whole thing about his book, where his first book is really where he became well-known and started getting the television. His book is pretty unvarnished about how chefing and being in the food universe worked in the 80s and 90s, which is a decidedly anti-woke, anti-fun existence. It's unbelievable labor.
What call?
Was it A Cook's Tour was his first book? I'm trying to remember.
Kitchen Confidential.
Kitchen Confidential, yeah. Okay. And it's a great read. Like, it's why everybody fell in love with him. It is an amazing read. But it's very unvarnished. And I think that's really how people connected, because he was like, listen, sometimes it is a guy from Mexico cooking the highest end French food in the universe because they're the best French chefs out there now. Because French people don't go to culinary school because they're middle class and upper class and they don't go cook. Until 20 years ago, being a cook was not a job you grew up to want to be. Like, you talk to people a generation or two above us, the only famous chefs were cookbook authors. You wouldn't know who cooked at your local, you know, high-end bistro, even though now I can name you 50 chefs around here. And that was really his entree. No pun intended.
Do you guys cook?
Oh, I used to write about food. I earned every pound I've got. It's a weird country. I want to go there and sit with someone's mom and be in the kitchen and watch them make food with unwashed hands and weird ingredients and then be like, no, this is good, isn't it? And I'm going to try it.
What's your favorite kind of food?
So I love all people, poor people food, which very often is dumplings, because every
dumplings
person has a dumpling. What's your background family wise?
I'm Czech and Cherokee. Okay. But on the Czech side, we make very delicious dumplings. A lot of the food is not very colorful. It's kind of brown, really, like zeli, knedlicky, things like that. But delicious dumplings.
Savory cabbage stuffed, so I have some Hungarian, which is similar to Czech, not too far away. And it's that really soulful, hearty Eastern European with a lot of wheat, because it's a wheat-based agriculture. Their meat's a lot of pig, a lot of sheep, way less seafood, except they do have freshwater seafood, which is weird for ocean people because we don't eat things like pike or perch.
A lot of pork, beef, things like that. Yeah. And a lot of it, like my grandmother would make things with a wooden spoon and roll everything, you know, by hand. Made with love, right?
But, and think of the ingredients that they had. They had that particular weather system created a lot of long season, cold weather vegetables, things like that. Not necessarily the fruit.
Potatoes, lots of potatoes.
A lot of fermented foods, like they didn't have yeast.
The zeli was sauerkraut. Breads.
Oh, man, sauerkraut. And talk about good for you. Sauerkraut and fermented stuff.
It's so good for your gut.
Yes, your interior biome needs that stuff. And the sterilization through processing of food is bad. It's better if we're eating stuff out of the dirt that someone
And it's one of those foods, if you think about sauerkraut, like how many restaurants just serve sauerkraut, right? Unless you're blessed to have a German restaurant near you, you're not going to be able to buy sauerkraut on a plate at a restaurant somewhere. So that means generally if you're eating sauerkraut, it's someone's grandmother's recipe, right? Exactly. And it's so good. Oh,
see, there was a few other things I wanted, because I know we always talk about food on here, because there was like a few questions that came in for Danielle. It was like, one of them is, do you eat fried chicken?
I love fried chicken. Yes.
Cause like,
Of course she does.
Every week. And it doesn't matter, because a bunch of people write in with questions and stuff like that. Like, we always joke, you could have Obama on here, and the first question would be, what does he put on his hot dog when he's in Chicago? So a bunch of them came through, and again, because of your modeling, and I wanted a quick model question for you, because, you know, we've heard that industry can be a little bit sketchier than the warehouses in Van Nuys.
Exactly.
Is that something that you have to try out for? Or is that, because again, when we were putting stuff together for this, we see that you're, you know, on the cover of Vogue, and you do a lot of that sort of thing. Is that something that you're offered, or is that something that, again, you have to go meet with the people and you have to kind of lock up that?
For covers, you typically have to go through an approval process. So for that, Anna Wintour had to actually approve me to do that.
Is that like a call your mom kind of thing, where you're like, Anna Wintour looked at the photos and gave me the thumb? Like, come on. That's pretty epic stuff, right?
Oh, man. Like, what do you do if she doesn't approve them, though? Like, what does that do to your life?
Is it crushing? Because I would be destroyed. I'd be like, oh, my God, that's the worst thing that ever happened to me.
They're like on Zoom, they're like.
What's that?
Like, if you were on Zoom meeting and they're like, look, the agent's talking to you, and you're like, yeah, she looked at him and. I'm done at that point. I'm retiring.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you and good night. Like, what do you do from that point? You know what I mean? But I've been through so much in my life, and so, you know, so much more rejection than actual, you know, two thumbs up. So it's like I take everything with a grain of salt now. But yeah, like for normal, you know, print jobs, you have to go to a casting typically. kind of similar to acting. It's just there's no pages of dialogue that you have to memorize. But yeah, for any of the covers, you have to get approved. It's a process.
One of my particularly favorite things, favorite pictures of you, Danielle, is a lot of them you're on a horse. See, I had a few horse questions. A, is it difficult to ride a horse?
I guess it depends on who it is. I don't know.
You know, I've never done it. I've had so many opportunities.
Derek, this is getting real weird, man. Really.
That was my other question was,
hey, Josh, you remember that time we were on a podcast where Derek asked about riding horses?
Yeah. Hey, Franz. Remember that one time at summer camp? Remember? It was in Canada?
No,
my
I was...
Canadian girlfriend? No. Hold on. We're back to something. So, Daniel, so Franz and I teach a lot, and you said something that triggered this, about failing or not making something. So we oftentimes say our biggest learning experiences come from the gift of failure. And failure really is the best thing that more people need in this world, because when you fail, it changes your entire perspective. What's a failure for you? Someone that by all intents and purposes has it all fucking together. You've got it all together. What's the fail that was like, and man, then I achieved, or then I launched?
You know what they say, if you fall off a horse, you have to get up and try again.
That's so funny. I was literally just going to say that. I mean, I've started riding when I was about 3 years old, when I was just a little pup, and I would fall off and I would get the wind knocked out of me and I would get up and I would keep trying. And I've been told no so many more times than I've been told yes, you know, and from each thing you learn something, and it develops, you develop a thick skin, right? And it's just, you know, take a lick and keep on ticking, as they say. And I mean, I've literally flatlined for 3 minutes. Like, I've died, I've come back to life, I've lived a million lives in one. And, you know, tomorrow's a new day.
How did you end up flatlining for 3 minutes?
I don't know. Do we have another podcast for that?
Did it involve a horse?
I feel like we need more time for that.
All right, we'll talk about that next time, because I did have a few other things, because I know when I was talking with your agent Mark, we wanted to touch, because you know, a kind of a unique opportunity here. You guys are all entrepreneurs in, you know, different ways and all that. So with all the acting and the modeling and all that, is that what started kind of the Vasanova Enterprises thing? And you know, or was it, you know, did the Vasanova Enterprises lead into the modeling, acting, and horse riding?
No, I never even knew what I wanted to be when I was a little kid. I was always in seventh grade. I came home and every day I watched the Weather Channel. So I wanted to be a Weather Channel at one point. Then at another point, I wanted to work at Jiffy Lube, super random, because I liked the jumpsuits that they wore when they were like changing the oil and doing all that. I'm kind of a tomboy, girly girl, I guess you could say. And then they wanted to groom me to be a jockey. They wanted to make me like the Danica Patrick of horse racing. So then there was that, but I was always very shy. And one of my good friends, she made me audition for the cheerleading squad. And I said no, and then she dragged me there. And I ended up making the squad. And then by my junior year, I was made captain. And so it started to kind of break me out of my shell. And we did a competition at a local mall for the MDA, which is the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And a scout from a modeling agency in New York came up to me and she said, you know, I like your look. We'd really like to bring you down to New York to test. And so my mom and I went down and they signed me. And that was sort of the beginning of everything.
So you really have the big break story of, you know, small town girl plucked up into this amazingly huge world.
Yeah, and kind of, you know, it just was serendipitous, right? And I worked at a restaurant. I went to UConn, University of Connecticut, and I worked at a restaurant there. And I had always wanted to move out to LA, but I was like really scared. And I got on the Patriots cheerleading squad. But like, we wouldn't make any money. We'd make like $100 a game. I'd always have to go up to Foxborough, train like three times a week. We wouldn't get paid for that. only for appearances and calendars and stuff like that. So I said, screw it. I'm going to drive out with these cats, go to LA and just chance it. And as soon as I was driving, once I hit Philly, my mom, she worked for American Airlines, and she said that these two good looking people came in and they were checking in to go out to LA. And so she said, oh, you know, my daughter just left for LA, and they asked what for. And so she told them, and long story short, the woman ended up giving her her card and said, here, I cast for Young and the Restless. Have her call me when she gets to LA. And I was in Santa Barbara because I didn't know, like, Santa Barbara wasn't LA. I didn't understand the dynamic. And I called her. She's like, when you get to LA, call me. So I literally like drove down to LA the next day. She's like, okay, come in on Friday. I went in, I talked to her for like 2 or 3 hours. And then she gave me a set of sides. She said, read this. I did. She gave me an adjustment. I did the adjustment. And then she's like, okay, you want the job? I go, yeah.
Unbelievable.
She said, okay, go to wardrobe. You work on Monday, you be here at 6:30 a.m. And that was basically my first job. If they only could all be that easy, you know?
Well, like, that's got to be devastating if that was your first experience, thinking, okay, obviously, you know, I'm talented and I'm good looking. I came out to LA and I got a job. And then you go and you audition and you don't get it. You audition and you don't get it. You audition.
Yeah. Well, then you have to go get an agent and a manager and learn the ropes and, you know, do all of that stuff, right?
How did you figure all that stuff out? What we joke about lawyering, they don't teach you anything about running a law firm when you go to law school. Zero. What I assume the same with you. You had no background in how to manage a growing entertainment career. It's figured out by yourself.
I didn't even know I wanted to do that, right? So you kind of throw it in and you're in this new city and you know nobody and you've got just, you know, $1,500 that you came out there with and you're kind of just thrown in the deep end, right?
And someone calls you and says, hey, will you handle this speeding ticket? And you go, yes, I'll do anything for money at this point. Been there. People never believe. Really, most lawyers at some point were in the same position.
So that leads me to a question about agents, right? So you get out there, you get your first job. At some point, you get an agent, right? Like the trust relationship that goes into picking up an agent, because that person, he or she, like, reality is, yeah, once you become established, you're going to get asked to audition for stuff. But man, if you pick the wrong agent for you, that probably to me seems like it could go south real quick. Like, talk to us about that.
Yeah, because, well, I thought that, you know, you get your agent and that's your agent, like, for life. I didn't know that you go through a lot of agents, a lot of managers. Your career is ever evolving. Your team is changing all the time. So it's not like, oh, you pick the wrong one and you're screwed, right? It changes and you mutates and you have contracts and maybe your contract's for a year or maybe it's 3 years. And so then, you know, you decide on if it's still a good fit. And if not, then c'est la vie and off you go.
A follow up to that. Have you ever missed out on something for whatever reason? I know I'm asking that because I was reading a couple of weeks ago that Matt Damon was talking that he passed on the first Avatar because he was making Elysium, not realizing that
first class problems. Okay.
That terrible for him.
There was a 2%. There was a 2% back end bonus tied to that, which would have worked out to like $275 million, and he passed on it.
Wow.
Well, have you ever passed on anything like that or just missed out on doing something else?
Knock on wood, one day I will have problems like that, but no, not thus far.
Well, but that follows up with the question of you're Matt Damon and you could have been in Avatar and you pass on it, right? Is the actor mentality from that point onward, yeah, like I'm Tom Selleck, I could have been Indiana Jones. I'm Matt Damon, I could have been the lead in Avatar. Or is it, man, I just lost out on $200 million. You know, what is the mentality there?
I mean, look, he's had he basically opened with Good Will Hunting. You know what I mean? So his career has been pretty darn good all the way through.
He's one of those people, if it is a failure, he's failed up nonstop. You just
fail up, right?
Yeah, hashtag rounders. Hashtag rounders.
Wasn't it Nick Cage that came out here sometime recently, was like, oh yeah, man, when I needed the money, I made a whole bunch of just absolutely terrible films that I never would have made otherwise. But when you got the work, you go and you do
it. Many of them are on Netflix right now.
But he's
cool. Like, he's cool.
Yeah.
He's fun of himself. And now it's like he's trying to get an Oscar. And so he's always kind of ebbing and flowing and evolving and changing and growing. And I respect and admire him for that.
Absolutely.
He made a movie.
He's cool.
He made a movie recently where he played himself.
Yes.
The actor. Yeah. I thought it was absolutely, I watched it and I was like, you know what? Think about the quality of actor that can sit there and take that role, basically mocking himself, right?
Right.
And it was an amazingly, I mean, for what it was a good movie. I mean, yeah. it was like the Roadhouse remake. And you knew I was going to bring up Roadhouse this week.
It was a good movie.
You
know what? I would stand by the original Roadhouse, but Jake Gyllenhaal was fantastic in this one. I was again.
I'm not watching the next Roadhouse, though. You can't have a second Roadhouse. It doesn't exist in this reality. I'm sorry. It just doesn't.
So do you think this one fell flat, or did you like it?
I'm not going to watch it. If it does not have Patrick and a car with fold-down.
You haven't seen it?
No, I have not seen it. I watched like 2 minutes of it, and I was like, I can't watch. I love the original Roadhouse. Amazing.
My position is, it's like Footloose. There will never be another original Footloose, right? Roadhouse, Patrick Swayze, excellent movie, right? But I can also appreciate a nostalgic throwback. I can also appreciate an attempt. I watched it. Yeah. Was it a lot of gratuitous Gyllenhaal with his shirt off because he had been ripped out? Yeah, it was a lot of that. But for what it was an Amazon movie. I had very low expectations. Those low expectations were met. I was happy.
And it was a ride, right? You went on the ride.
Yeah.
It's finally nice to talk about a different movie, because Josh has been talking about how great Dune and Dune 2.
Hey. All the Dune movies are good. All of them. They all have their own value in their own special way.
The spice must flow.
Dirty Dancing 7 or whatever that Franz is signing up for.
Danielle, what is your favorite movie of all time? Or maybe your top two or three favorite movies of all time?
Ooh, that's tough. There's so many. I mean, as a kid, even still today, I love the Black Stallion, the Coppola film, the Black Stallion, because I'm a horse girl. And that movie just says so much with so little. It's such a beautiful movie. But I love, like, you know, The Great Escape. I love The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Any Sergio Leone, you know, Steve McQueen. I love kind of the good old days.
What's your guilty pleasure, juvenile, stupid, I can't believe I love it movie?
Like Goonies, things
Goonies is a good one.
Goonies, very good there. We also would have accepted Top Secret with Val Kilmer. That is a fantastic movie. Any of the original
Real movies. Genius.
Real genius. Oh my God.
Weird science.
I found my publicist from Gabriel Jarrett, who was my next door neighbor in Santa Monica. The guy who played opposite Val Kilmer in Real Genius.
Really?
Yeah, he was my neighbor.
Really?
Real Genius probably got watched literally 500 or 1,000 times as a kid. Like, it's what I wanted to grow up and be in Real Genius.
I didn't even know who he was. I didn't even know the movie until after I met him.
So the end of the movie, there's a song as the popcorn, not to spoil the movie for anybody who hasn't watched it, as the popcorn is flooding out of the house, everybody wants to rule the world. It was the first time I'd heard that song when I watched that movie. And I was like, this is the greatest song. This is a great song. And
okay.
I was a kid of the 80s, man. It was a great movie. Val Kilmer. Who would have thought?
Another one. Better Off Dead.
There you go. Yes.
Classic.
We can go. I mean, the list is so long, right?
And I feel bad for kids these days. My girlfriend's only 7 years younger than me. She just turned 40. Their movies weren't as good as my movies.
No. Like, remember really. E.T.? Do you remember
E.T.? Oh, yeah. Original E.T. Our bad movies are so much better than the bad movies that got made later on. Like, it doesn't compare.
Think about this. I was watching some Turner classics recently, and I'm like, I have not seen another Lawrence of Arabia. Like, one of my favorite movies is Casablanca. Hands down, one of my favorite movies. I can watch it weekly.
Mm.
There's not going to be another Casablanca, right? Like,
I was in Morocco on this horseback riding adventure, and I literally flew over Casablanca. So cool. Yeah, those are the greats. Right. Yeah,
I don't think Hollywood can make the big format movies anymore, because if it's so big for set pieces, they're going to do it all through AI and graphics and all that.
It's changing so much.
I don't see we ever have a Ten Commandments scale production that ever happens. So,
permission to dork out for a second. People watch, like myself, who watch the original Star Wars movies, like when they were in the theaters, with what they could do late 70s, early 80s with special effects, right? As a kid, that was more real to me than a green screen like CGI. And look, I appreciate, like, I have an 8-year-old. I appreciate some of the stuff we can do with CGI now, but like, there's just something to be said. I'm feeling very nostalgic right now. There's something to be said about, like, when the Death Star blew up the first time in that original Star Wars, I was like, that's what it looks like to blow up a Death Star in real space. I mean, I'm done. Put it, stick a fork in there.
Those were people on the Death Star. You know that? They weren't robots.
They were subcontractors.
What about the staff on the Death Star, man? That's terrible. There was a bunch of completely innocent maintenance and physical plant people that all got destroyed.
I always loved in How I Met Your Mother, where they kept going, it was an architectural problem. Because Ted was an architect. He's like, this is a contractor problem. It was not the architects.
You got to go talk to engineering about that.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to go upstairs. Anyways, that hour flies by so quick, doesn't it? We didn't really get to anything, but, you know, that's what this show is all about.
We're hanging.
It's a chat show. That's exactly what it is.
Oh, for more Josh and Franz, maybe you need a lawyer. Maybe you need advice. Maybe you're being sued because you designed a poor Death Star and all those poor people died from a rocket going in the opening. Check out Joshua Schiffer at www.jdgrouplaw.com, on Twitter at Lawyer Schiff, or just Google Joshua Schiffer. For an extra helping of Franz in Louisiana, visit www.borghartlawfirm.com, or on Twitter at Borghart Law, or just use the old international network to Google it. And of course, if you want a little bit more Danielle Vasanova, check her out on Instagram at Danielle Vasanova, on Twitter at Vasanova, or on the World Wide Web at DanielleVasanova.com. Everybody, guys, thank you so much for coming by. This has been a hoot.
Thank you.
Too short.